Welcome to episode 167 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Boxers and Saints Part 2 by Jean Luen Yang. And now the cast begins.
Beatific?
What?
Yeah.
What's that word?
Saintly.
Yeah, saintly.
Beatific?
Yeah, you've never heard that word before?
No.
Like a beatitude.
That doesn't help. I haven't heard that word before either.
Okay.
Beately?
Beatification is the process of making someone a saint, like canonizing them.
Yeah. Somebody, if a saint is canonized, they're beatified.
Okay.
Ha! Catholic upbringing. 1 point.
I knew that because my favorite book is Canticle for Leibowitz.
Ah.
Okay, say it one more time.
Beatific. Wait.
Beatific?
Yeah, beatific.
Beatified?
No, we're
canonized.
Yeah, say beatific. No, say another beatific episode.
Beatific, okay. You guys ready?
Yep.
Welcome to another beatific episode of the Atomic Pirate Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hey!
And David.
Hey.
And this week, we read the second half of Boxers and Saints, the Saints part of it, by Jean Luen Yang. And I guess we can just say this wraps up our best of 2013. We really just tacked this onto the end, hoping it would feel separate, but I feel like this is probably the best of 2013 anyway, so I'm just going to call it now.
I think it's certainly
considered
best of.
Yeah, Boxers and Saints, I think, was better than the four that we read for best of 2013, so I'm just going to tack this onto the end of that one. So this time we got, in the first half, we got Little Bao, and he notices this woman whose face looks like it's from the opera, right?
Opera Mask Girl.
Opera Mask Girl, you're right. That's what he calls her.
Opera Face Girl?
Yes, something like that. And then, you know, Little Bao goes on his story, and as part of Little Bao's story, he sees her, imagines having, like, a family with her, and then loses sight of her, and then sees her again with a cross on her neck, and ends up having to kill her. And so that's what we get in Boxers, but in Saints, we get the story from her point of view. We get them from this really unfortunate girl's point of view.
Yeah.
Little Bao's story, like, starts out kind of happy, but this girl, like, starts out really fucking sad.
Well, hers starts sad and is happy in the middle and then gets sad.
I actually feel like it could be interpreted, depending on, like, your viewpoints, as having a happy ending as well. At least bittersweet.
Yeah.
Mm.
Because she sees Jesus, and he's all like, compassion, and I mean, if she is Christian, and it's true, and I mean, she's shown that she's a true believer, she's willing to die for her faith, so maybe she went to heaven?
And, I mean, technically, she is Christian, because she's been baptized.
Yeah.
Whether or not she fully understands is another thing. But
as far as if somebody's said, you know, I feel like that's a one of the litmus tests for being Christian. Not to mention, she definitely, you know, maybe she doesn't love doing it, but she certainly practices Christian values, you know?
Yeah. I mean, by the end, she's not willing to renounce her faith, and it seems like she has got a really good grasp of, like, what it's all about as well, better than when she was, like, 9 years old.
Yeah, I love her reason for wanting to become Christian. She's like, you know, that I want to be a devil. Just want to embrace it. And so, of course, she goes to become a foreign devil, or a secondary devil.
Yeah, it's like kind of it's ironically sad too, because it's like she's clearly a good person. I think one of my favorite scenes in this is when she's in the market with her mom and she has that like crazy face and she says, you know, it's just common courtesy to let people know that you're evil. Right?
Yeah.
It's like this kid, obviously, is fairly well-mannered despite some of her, I guess, it's childhood naughtiness, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But what... Okay, I'll get right into it. I feel like one of the big things about Four Girls' story is that maybe the... one of the fundamental ways in which China wasn't ready for Christianity is in the home and family structure. Because her becoming a Christian, I mean, that's here nor there with her faith and the state of the country and everything, but it messed up completely her interaction with her family to the point where she couldn't go home. And that's, you know, because of her father and all, but it's also like, she spent so much time at church learning this new religion that she forgot to do her chores with her family. She ended up completely neglecting them over and over and over and over. And so it feels to me like there's this kind of theme of, like, we can see that the message of Christianity isn't necessarily bad, and Four Girl might just be a really good Christian. The problem is that the way that the culture of China is set up is that Jesus Christ is taking Four Girl away from her family. And that there's this really, like, interesting juxtaposition between the two structures.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I mean, I think it's also a critique of traditional Chinese familial structures, because I think we see this really lovely, vulnerable moment with her mom, where the mom says, like, when your father died, it almost broke me, and if I were to lose you, and she just kind of trails off, and it's like, you know, despite what it may seem, the mom really cares about Four Girl.
Yeah.
But then you get, like, this shitty grandfather who's just like, oh, you're a devil and you're Death Girl. And then he has cousin, is it Chang?
Yeah, cousin Chang.
Cousin Chang, he has him beat her when she says, and I mean, there's kind of family bitterness about Christianity that we find out about, but at the same time, that's no reason to physically abuse a child.
Yeah, that really tender scene with her mother is perfect, because you get that tender moment, right, where it's just the two of them connecting, and that's beautiful. And then at the end of the moment, her mother says, and by the way, she go to apologize to Dr. Zhang, or go apologize to Uncle Zhang, who had Cousin Chang beat her.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, in what world should this girl be apologizing to the man who had his son beat her? That's no. And so that seems really interesting, because you get the closeness of this family structure, but you also get the incredibly rigid sense of, like, the elder having not just respect, but, like, driving the family into making the rules. And because Uncle Zhang just happens to be the oldest brother, you have to apologize to him for saying something to make him beat you. Which is fucked.
It provides actually a really nice counterpoint to Little Bao, because he promised to always honor his father, and his dad was clearly, like, a just dude, right? Yeah. He was a righteous fellow. But, he stood up for people who were being bullied by the Christians, and he tried to, like, do his best to get help for the town. And in this case, this is a really nice comparison, because it's like, well, what happens when that traditional father figure, the patriarch of the family, isn't just? Mm-hmm. How does that occur? And then we're kind of left to wonder, you know, we see the favorite of the family always being a boy. Is it because Four Girl is a girl? Or is it because grandfather's just a douchebag? I mean, so it explores that idea of traditional Chinese family in contrast to what we see of, like, I guess, how Christianity treats Bao and Four Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff.
I think also in there, there's, you're spot on with the juxtaposition between their two fathers, right? Because Bao having a completely normal, nice upbringing, right? There's nothing wrong with the way that he was brought up, per se. he's got two older brothers who pick on him, but fuck, that's every family with older brothers, right? I mean, yeah. He grew up with a relatively normal life in a happy family. And his destiny ended up him leading a rebellion, murdering hundreds, if not thousands of people, and then dying in a giant battle in the capital, right? And then you get this girl who just, like, had the shittiest upbringing you could think of. Emotional abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse, all kinds of abuse. And she goes on to try and lead a normal life and gets compassion and is sincerely confused about the nature of her existence and the reality around her and what the fuck is going on. But in the end, she just dies praying quietly, nicely, politely. You know, and it's like, it really makes you wonder, like, it's not make you wonder. I love the way that it illustrates how the choices that they both make lead them down such different paths. Right? Because you figure if anybody's going to lead a rebellion, it would be the woman who was abusing shit as a child.
And she does want to rebel against, well, first, I mean, her taking on of the Christian faith starts as rebellion.
Yeah.
But it ends up with her wanting to protect people, which is something I think Bao is also looking for, and they just have very different approaches. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I actually, she did have a quiet ending, but I also feel like, especially in juxtaposition to Joan of Arc, she had a very victorious ending, even though she died.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, like, she's sitting there and she says, okay, the only thing I can give you is this prayer. And later we find out she tells Bao the Lord's Prayer. And it saves his life. And, you know, this whole time she's kind of struggling with this existential question. What am I here for? What is my purpose? What is, you know, God supposed to stir in me that gets me, you know, doing something useful and good? And it turns out that it's actually aiding her enemy, which is a very, I think, Christian ideal, to help someone no matter who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost seems, especially because at the end, Bao says, look, I gave up my ideals and, you know, pretended to be a foreign devil in order to save my own life. It seems like she ends up being the stronger character in the end, because she's completely unwilling to sacrifice her ideals and her sense of self in order to get anything out of that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was thinking that, I was kind of coming at it from the opposite. It was like, after we read the epilogue at the end, do we think that maybe Bao, even though he's this, like, warrior character, or at least that's what he tries to be, is he ultimately a coward in the end? Like, if you think about his final moments in the story, and many of the things he did, like maybe even killing Four Girl, you know, was he, I mean, he didn't have to kill her, right?
No.
He was the protagonist in Volume 1, but that doesn't make him a good person, right? I think, if I'm trying to remember, last week we talked about how, like, there was a lot of moral ambiguity around Bao.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when we see the story from a different point of view, from the other side, it really makes Bao look like a bad person. I mean,
oh yeah. I mean, the first time he was, oh, go ahead.
He was doing bad things, maybe for the right reason.
The thing is, he was.
It makes me think of that thing that Obi-Wan says to Anakin, how, like, only a Sith deals in absolutes. That maybe Bao is like a Sith, right? He's like, it's, there's no middle ground. You're either with us or against us, even if you're Chinese. You can't be both. you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And from her point of view, Bao is especially evil, because the first time you see Bao or the Society of the Righteous and Harmonious Fist, the first time you see them is when they come to that town where they're all holed up, and they approach the gates chanting, kill, kill, kill.
Yeah.
That's fucking terrifying. And the people in there, most of them were just trying to live a decent life. Especially people like Four Girl and, crap, what the hell's his real name? The guy with the rat
Kong?
Face.
Kong.
Yeah.
Kong.
Like, they're just trying to, like, fucking live a life after being rejected from the rest of their society. They're just trying to find a place. And I think that's interesting, like, the way that Four Girl's story and Bao's story are opposite symmetry, right? Bao starts out sure of himself and becomes lost. And I think in the ending, you call him a coward, and it is cowardly for him to try and recite the prayer to save his own life. It's very cowardly. But I think it's more of a reflection that not only did he physically lose things, like he lost the library, he lost the ability to call down the gods of the opera, he lost the woman he was starting to fall in love with, but you see in that epilogue that he fully has lost himself.
Yeah.
And he started out so sure of himself on his journey. And then with Four Girl, you get the complete opposite. In the beginning, she's so lost, she doesn't even have a fucking name. Like, holy shit. In terms of not having an identity, like, she doesn't even know if she's normal or a devil. She's so lost in terms of identity and name that she's striving to become a devil. What the fuck? But in the course of her journey of seeking out becoming a devil, she finds herself, gets a name, and becomes sure of herself, gains that identity, gains that sense of purpose, to the point that at the end, she is the exact opposite of Bao. She's like, hold on a second, bro, I'm going to sit here and pray for a minute, and then you can kill me. Because I know in myself that that's the right thing to do right now. Whereas at that moment, he's lost. He's completely lost in the same moment on the opposite side of the fence. But I think that when he invades the city, that's the intersection of their level of sureness. That's the moment where they're both sure of themselves still. Because right after that, he burns down the church. And that scene where he burns down the church, we talked last week, that's where he says he has, what's his name? Lu Ping?
The magistrate, right?
Yeah, I don't know his name. I'm terrible with names. But he has the magistrate recite the rumors about the foreign devils for him, because he knows what he's doing is wrong when he burns down that church. So after they run into each other in this town, he begins to lose himself. And after that, she is completely sure of herself and what she needs to do. And such an incredible juxtaposition between those two. I love it.
The points that you've just made here, like, I totally agree, but they also, for me, actually kind of bring up this idea that Bao actually kind of may have had a harder time of it with dealing with conflicting ideals. Because if you think about it, like, you pointed out how lost Four Girl was. Like, she didn't even have any sense of identity, and she grew into this mode of belief. So she basically, you know, thought, okay, I'm bad. But then she accepted Christianity and became a nice person, or was pretty much always a nice person, but became a more compassionate person. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at Bao, that church scene actually really highlights the fact that he has two conflicting ideas going on in him, because his father and his upbringing trained him how to be a good person. He knows it's wrong
mm-hmm.
to burn those people in the church. He knows it's wrong to kill women and children. And he does it anyway. And the thing with him is, like, it actually seems like it's a greater struggle, because it's replacing a set of already established ideals with another one that's nationalistic. It's xenophobic,
mm-hmm.
and it's fairly cruel. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I'm not contradicting you in any way. I guess I'm just trying to add on. this idea that maybe Bao actually even had it harder in terms of just morality, because Four Girl was lost and then she was given a fairly easy out. But Bao already knew what he was doing and then was being egged on by the First Emperor to do worse things and then had a conflict of ideals that he believed in, both of them.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that, yeah, I would totally agree. And what made it especially difficult for Bao, or maybe even made it more difficult, I should say, is that he became the leader of this movement too, and now he had people looking to him for answers, and he had to be, he was, maybe he didn't have to be, but he was compelled to be consistent with his decision making. So he had all these external forces pushing him in the wrong direction, and he's in, like the example of the magistrate at the church, reciting these rumors to Bao. He starts to have second thoughts about what he's doing, but he's so far in and he's gone so far down that path that he just can't easily change his trajectory until he's basically on his own, and that's when we see him use the Lord's Prayer, right? So yeah, I would definitely agree that Bao, you know, like you guys both said, he had the opposite journey of a Four Girl, where he had a good foundation and then his world kind of came apart around him. I lost where I was going with that, but yeah, you get what I was saying, right?
Yeah,
completely. So, what other characters in this do we get a different perspective of? We talked about the different perspective we get of Bao through this, but he's not the only person we get to see differently. I think the other person we really get to see in different light is Father Bei.
Oh yeah. We see him from Bao's perspective in Boxers, and the only things we see is where he smashes the god, the statue. Yeah. And then we see him helping the bully. We see him, help him acquire justice for a slight that he felt he received. But we learn that, you know, Father Bei didn't actually, I mean, not including the smashing of the statue, but
he had been duped.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And that he really is he is very true to his beliefs. More so than anybody in here, at least for the whole time that we see him. I mean, I feel like we can include Four Girl in that. Like, in the end, she sticks to her guns. But Father Bei definitely, he represents, at least when we see him in this light, he represents the best of, Christianity, right? He is trying to absolutely do the right thing, even when his personal beliefs disagree with it. You know, he didn't like that Dr. Wan
was using opium.
And then when the refugees come, I forget what religious group that Western woman was from.
Oh yeah.
But she, they had a disagreement for some reason. They didn't agree on some, religious tenet, whatever. It doesn't matter. But they, he took them in anyways because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. So
I just have one question about Father Bei. I'd say 95% of the foreign devils we see in Boxers and Saints are intensely racist. is Father Bay racist? I mean, he's not the obvious kind of racism like the German ambassador or German whatever it was in the one quarter. You know, obviously. He's not sitting there saying, I have a dozen servants just like you, and you're not worth the spit on the bottom of my boot. Father Bay's not racist like that. But I think something about the way that he described his journey to come to China, how they just wanted to get him out of the way, and all that makes sense. And I like how he was like, I know that they just wanted to get me out of the way, but it still worked, and I still wanted to come. But the way he talked about like coming over to China was almost like, I want to retame the savages.
So I think he's hella racist.
Okay.
And it's because the concept of the noble savage is racist, yeah. And that's totally what he's on about. Because yeah. He's like, you know, they're dirty, poor people, but there's nobility in their eyes because they're so dirty and poor. And it's like, dude, no.
I was going to say the same thing, but Jen put it way better than
sorry.
That. No,
okay.
It's
still
totally,
your line.
No, you said it better than I was going to, so.
Yeah, it's a much more low-key, sneaky kind of racist that kind of like,
He's not racist. You know what I mean?
That's not malicious racism.
He's not looking at them spitefully. He's not even necessarily looking at them consciously thinking they're inferior.
Right. He feels like it's his duty to raise them up.
Yeah. I think the difference is he's not looking at them and saying, you as a people are categorically inferior to us foreign devils as a people. He's looking at them and saying, your society and your culture is not as valuable as mine. Which, on a scale of racism, I'd say isn't so bad.
He thinks he's doing something benevolent, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Bao, he's doing... he thinks he's doing whatever it is he's doing for the right reasons. And maybe his isn't as malicious as Bao's, or at least, you know, it's not as violent, but, you know, one could argue, I mean, that's Bao's whole point of view, is that he sees them as robbing the Chinese of something, whether that's land, resources, or culture in this case, right? But I think the problem, I think, you know, the thing with Bao is that he sees all foreign devils as the same. They're all there for the same reasons. But that's certainly not the case. And we get where he tells her that they're dividing up China. And he says that he's fighting for their land, just like, and she draws that connection from Bao to Joan of Arc.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? She wants to unite China peace. She wants to make everybody live together in harmony, where Bao wants to make China like national, like from a nationalist point of view, he to unite China. Four Girls doing it from a human level, I guess.
So before we dive into the Joan of Arc part of that, part of me kind of feels like Bao and Bay are mirrors of each other, and they're both crusading to lift China back up into its place.
I don't know if I wouldn't say.
Maybe not mirrors. I don't know.
I wouldn't say if there is an analog to Father Bay in Bao's story, I'd say it's the First Emperor.
Hmm.
Because
or the fat guy on the mountain.
No, I don't even think Master Big Belly.
Yeah.
He was a great character, but I think the First Emperor is a better analog to Father Bay because they're both trying to push their, for lack of a better word, agenda onto a well, in Bao's case, he's literally an avatar for the first emperor, right?
Yeah.
But and he's being very direct, where Father Bei is, he's not being as direct as the first emperor, but he's trying to impart his beliefs and social system onto a people that he thinks are in need of his wisdom.
Yeah.
And the first emperor is the same with Bao. He's trying to say, you know, this is the way, you know, I'm trying to unite China just like you are, and you should do it my way because I succeeded. So I think they're better analogs to one another than Bao and Father Bei. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Andy, I didn't mean to, like, you're wrong.
No, it's fine. It's what I'm here for, to get a discussion going. So then the other thing is Joan of Arc. Where does she fit in? Is she the analog for Master Big Belly? Please.
You just want somebody to be the analog for Master Big Belly.
So we can talk about Big Belly.
Maybe Kong is the analog. No, I'm just kidding. It's not Kong.
No, it's Raccoon.
Yes.
Sorry,
yes.
Guys.
Yes, it is. No, you're completely right. You're completely right.
I love Raccoon, by the way, and I'm so sad that Joan ate him.
I love when the raccoon comes in and bows to her.
Yeah.
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 You're badass.
I like that, Jen, that Big Belly and Raccoon are analogs, because they kind of set their disciple on the path, right? So, yeah, I agree with that. Right. Even if you were saying it with...
No, I mean...
It's funny, I think that you are correct.
I think in terms of the rhetoric, it is true, because it's kind of the first master you meet before you move on to your real like spiritual master, who in Bao's case was the first emperor, and then in Four Girls' case was Joan. It's not such a spiritual thing as the visions, but there is like a magical realism to both the emperor and the dirty raccoon, which is like so wonderful. And if you recall, like at the very beginning, Four Girl is praying for death, and she says, you know, please come, just take me. And then she sees the raccoon, and she's like, death, is that you? And she goes, no, death is beautiful and noble and fierce, and you're mangy. And then she realizes that the raccoon has something to offer, whereas, you know, when little Bao is told by Red Lantern to go up to the mountain, he's looking for a kung fu master who is beautiful and fierce and, you know, so noble. And he finds, like, this fat man, and he's like, who's this douche? So, I mean, there's kind of a parallel there.
But on their journeys, they both do find the beautiful incarnation of death, right? Little Bei finds the woman of compassion. Mm-hmm. And Four Girl finds Joan of Arc in her moment of death. Beautiful and fierce. And so they both find it.
And there's that lovely overlap of the symbolism with the hands and the eyes, too. Okay. Like, Jesus's stigmata turn into the eyes, and then it's like, oh, it wraps around. So.
Well, maybe Master Big Belly has a bit of a Jesus in him, too, because I'm not saying Master Big Belly is Jesus.
He ate him. Sorry, I couldn't stop
myself. But what I mean is, yes, he ate him. No, but like, you know, Jesus gave his life to cleanse sin from everybody, right? So he gave, so in direct case of Four Girl, Jesus' death gave her the clean start she needed to become the strong person we see at the end. Whereas Master Big gave his life to give Bao the strength to follow follow the path that he ultimately goes down. Because both of them, I mean, we both see, there's the eye right? In both, I mean, in Master Big Belly's case, it's his belly. But he gives up his, he dies, right? His mystical energy is what gave him the big belly, and he gives that to Bao, and then he dies. He dies for Bao, so Bao can complete his mission, or at least attempt it. I mean, he fails, right? But, so, you know, maybe there's a connection from that regard, too.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
We're like all really fucking smart tonight.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is a very smart story, and there's a lot of layers in here. You know, there's nothing. I feel like there isn't any throwaway content in this story. The creator definitely put the work in to make everything, you know, relevant or matter. So.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, let's go back around then to talking about some more characters. What do we think about Dr. Wan and the development of him as a character? The acupuncturist.
He was also a good Christian, and I was actually... The only moment in this entire comic where I kind of felt like, well, of course that happened, was when he sacrificed himself to save Father Bay.
Hmm.
And I think that's... In part because, like, you know, self-sacrifice is part of the Christian ideal. And, you know, I think we're supposed to see the whole, you know, you can see that Dr. Wan is an opium addict, but he's clearly a good person, and Bay is being too strict on this, and it highlights the fact that Bay is sometimes, like, way too douchey about his faith. Right, like, you know, he realizes at the end too, when Wan dies, like, I should have known not to do this because this man is a good man, and, you know, Bay repents too. So I don't know, I feel like Wan wasn't as fleshed out a character. He was kind, but at the same time he almost seemed to exist to be able to show that other characters are capable of, like, repentance and compassion rather than enacting it himself.
I get where you're coming from, Jen, when you say that the instance where Dr. Wan sacrifices himself, where you think it's like, of course that's what happened. But I feel like maybe it's the exact same thing, but it's like he did it as a shot at redemption, you know, to say that, you know, Father Bay, you weren't wrong initially, you know, I have this problem, but it doesn't make me less of a person or less of a quality Christian. I don't know. I didn't see it necessarily the same way. I didn't feel like a doy.
Fair enough.
But, you know, I see where you're coming from, too. I'm not saying you're wrong. Yeah. I don't know.
No, I get you.
That's just how I feel. That was funny.
There's less. I feel like there's less to talk about in this half because it's really all just about Four Girl and around here. And it's not the other one wasn't about Little Bao, but.
So I got a topic because last week we kept like lamenting over and over how sad Volume 1 was. We were so sad about it, which I think is legit because it is really, really sad. But how did this one, like, what was the emotional reaction here? Did it make us, like, that same kind of sad? Is it a different sad? Was it happy? Like.
Andy, why don't you take this one?
Fuck. It wasn't sad or happy. I was just sitting there kind of lamenting Four Girls' choices. Because I feel like by the end, Bao had put himself in a corner where it was a real tragedy. Where either way, he was not going to come out of it happy. There was going to be no good ending for little Bao. But up until the end where you remember, oh yeah, he kills her. there's a sense that, you know, Viviana could conceivably come out of this okay.
Well, I was holding on to hope that somehow, because, I mean, we don't actually see Bao kill her.
Correct.
In Boxers, and I thought maybe, just maybe, he does the right thing.
And lets her go?
Yeah, and I was hoping for that so bad, and that was not what happened. So I was kind of, that was a little bit sad for me.
I feel like...
Because I was... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go on.
I was just going to say, I was hoping... I was really... Like, I was really pulling for Bao there, and he let me down.
I kind of feel like this one emotionally snuck up on me and then bludgeoned me. Like, with a sock full of quarters or something. Because the first one, I was like, okay, this is not going to end well. You could see the sadness building up. And it's like you said, like, there's hope until the very end that Viviana is going to make it out of this alive. Or at least, you know, have some kind of good ending. And maybe she does, but then that moment where she's like, shut up a minute and let me pray. And then you see Joan of Arc in the fire. I was like kind of fine just reading through, and then I saw that panel and my eyes watered. It was an intense emotional reaction because I was like, oh shit. And it was incredibly sad, even though, you know, she sees her purpose in her faith and she's like, okay, I'm going to tell you this prayer. And it seems like she's kind of just flailing this whole time for her existential purpose, and then she finds it, so that's nice. But on the other hand, I walked away feeling like she deserves so much more, whereas for Bao, I really was like, well, he kind of dug his own grave the whole time. He took really bad advice, and he vacillated on some points when he shouldn't have, and it all connected to bad results. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, it was just kind of like, whoa, this is a bad life. It was shitty for her that this happened, and maybe it didn't have to be that way. And I don't know, just I wasn't sad about it until that point where she starts trying to pray, and then she tells Bao the prayer, and then it saves him, and that just broke my heart, because I really feel like it should have saved her. But then again, that's the idea, like this self-sacrifice. She becomes the Christ-like figure in the end and fulfills her purpose. So I don't know, it's bittersweet, but the fact that it was bittersweet made me more unhappy, if that makes sense. I don't know.
No, it does. And
yeah, it definitely makes sense.
I mean, aside from the fact that in Boxers you see them go into the alley and then you see him come out with a bloody sword, you know, there's foreshadowing within just Saints that she's not going to make it out. Her fascination, the constant mentioning of Saints, the fact that she sees fucking Joan of Arc, right? And the talk about, I don't remember if it's Dr. Wan or Father Bay who tells her, like, in order to be canonized, you have to die. These are the people who died and became saints, you know? And so you see the Boxers, and then I think the point that Jean Luen Yang's trying to make here is that these people who suffered to bring Christianity to the people of China, these people are saints. And Four Girl is a saint here, because in the end, she does save a person. She saves a person who, for all rights, from her point of view, should not be saved. That guy should not be saved by her. But in the end, that's exactly what happens. And it's because of the compassion, I think, that she gets that's allowed to happen. And I mean, it's not her compassion. She didn't go out of her way. She didn't choose to save him. But sort of the existential will of the universe compassion that she has saves him. the same way that it's explained in the first Boxers, that that kind of compassion transcends single being identity. And so it's really interesting how you get that build up this entire time, and Four Girl's not special. it's said over and over and over, she's not special. Joan of Arc was special. Joan of Arc led a battle. Joan of Arc did this awesome thing where she picked out her emperor from amidst a crowd of people. She got him the crown back. She did all this stuff. She reunited a country in the Christian mold. Like, she did. Joan of Arc special. Four Girl's not special. She doesn't even have a fucking name. Right? But at the end of the day, she really, really is.
Man, that is sad.
See, but that's why I think I like the Boxer's half of this better than the Saints, because I feel like the Boxer half was tragic, and this is sad. Like, to
yeah,
that bit of definition, in my mind, the definition of tragedy is the damned if you do, damned if you don't. There's no way people come out of this happy. There's no way this can possibly end well. That's my sort of idea of tragedy. And not just in the melancholy sense, but in the grand sense, in the way that it has to matter to empires and kings and that sort of level. Like, that's tragedy in my mind. And I think Little Bao lives up to that in his half of the story. I think his story is tragic. But this is sort of the opposite of that, and just in the kind of sad way. But I don't think any less that Viviana has any choice. I think as soon as Bao comes around the alley, she's not coming out of it anyway well, right? Because either she chooses to completely give up the sense of identity that she has built in herself over the course of the story, which is years and years of her life. All of the finding that she has done of self will just be thrown to the wind, or she dies. She doesn't come out of that alley good. There's no good way that she gets out of there. And so I don't know why that's not tragic in my mind. Maybe because it's just some random woman in an alley and it doesn't matter for the country of China. I don't know. But for some reason, this feels sad, whereas that felt tragic. Maybe it is just that grand scale. I don't know.
Well, I think we've also been trained to view tragedy in a very Aristotelian sense, which pits man against society. And here, we don't really see a society that has a valid point. We just see, like, a mean grandfather and a mother who gives some love, but clearly not enough. And this idea of self-journey, self-finding, self-reflection is what Viviana has. On the other hand, and I mean, in the end, too, she really says, you know, my name is Viviana. She establishes self. For Bao, it's more about, who am I in relation to the first emperor? Who was the first emperor in relation to China? Who am I in relation to China? And is what I'm doing good? Is it, you know, are my personal choices and my personal wants conflicting with what is good for the nation as a whole? So we kind of, I think, feel Bao in a grander scheme for the nation, but then we get Viviana in this concept of, you know, being really self-focused, whereas Bao lost sense of self in a lot of ways. So we think of Bao as more classically tragic, I'm inclined to believe.
Yes. What else we got to talk about?
Talk about everybody a little bit. We can mention the art. There wasn't much color in the Saints.
So gray.
Except for Joan. Joan is so yellow.
And Jesus is colored, too.
Yeah.
That's right. Jesus was black.
That's not what I meant.
But I think it reflects the fact that again, I think it's the way that they are on opposite journeys that intersect, right? Bao's world starts out full of color. Full of color. You get the opera, you get the actors on the stage, you get the earth god idol. This world is full of color. And at the end, the final thing you see is color leaving him. And color leaving his world and his cause. It's going away. And for Four Girl, her world starts out fucking gray. So gray. She's so lost. Her life sucks. But as she gets closer to her final moment, there's more color mixed in there. Like, she sees more visions of Joan, and she takes comfort in seeing Joan's battle out in front of the ramparts until the very end, when she's completely and wholly embraced by the compassionate color of Christ. You like that compassionate color of Christ? Bam! Alliteration, suckers! But I love the way that it's a visual thread that carries the written thread as well. It's great. I mean, that's just what I think it is. And you guys can, you know, what did you guys think?
I do not disagree with you.
Wonderful. That's what I like to hear. I will say one of my favorite scenes in this part was when Four Girl was trying to come up with a devil face.
That was pretty funny.
She's going through different faces, and then she's just walking through town with it on like it ain't no fucking thing. Oh, it was great. And she's walking around like it's nothing, and her mom's trying to ignore it too, except everybody in town is fucking looking at her. Those panels were drawn masterfully. It was great. Did you guys have a favorite scene in this part?
I don't know. I think my favorite single panel from all of this was the post-resurrection Jesus, actually. I just thought that, you know, the hands and the stigmata becoming eyes. I mean, Jen mentioned this a little bit earlier. I just thought that was a beautifully drawn panel.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, you know, with Viviana put in the foreground of that panel, it's like you see her her realization of you know, of her, she fully realizes herself in that moment, you know,
mm-hmm.
as a Christian, and she embraces her conviction fully in this scene, you know.
What about you, Jen?
I actually really liked, I think it was a series of three panels with Joan at the stake, burning. And the first one, she's like, Jesus! And she looks really unhappy. And the second one is the same thing. And then the third one, she says, Jesus! And Jesus is standing there and she's smiling, even though she's on fire. And I like that just because it gave me hope that Viviana might have a happy ending. Because, I don't know, I think in a lot of ways her fight is obviously supposed to mirror Joan's, even though Joan is like, no, we have our own destinies. And I really, really wanted Viviana to succeed in some way. I felt like she was the most sympathetic character in this, in like both volumes. I don't know, like, I figure if Joan could smile, then maybe she could too, and they'd be happy in the end, and that seems good. So, that was my favorite.
Yeah, and then it culminates too with her, that moment where she's kneeling and praying, with Bao standing behind her. And it's like in that moment she's found serene peace through her prayer. Ah, that's a good full frame. It's completely, there's nothing about that full page thing of her kneeling that's like, so, oh my God, that's such amazing art. But it's just the beautiful simplicity of it.
Yes.
So, do we even, like, need to rate this? Do we even have to, like, go through the thing?
I think maybe we can just score it. I think we've all said, talked about
but
this.
But that's the thing. I already know what we're going to score it. Dave,
okay,
go.
Okay. How about this? Ready? We'll just all do it at the same time, okay? Everybody say their number at the same time.
Okay.
Okay.
3, 2, 1, 5.
5.
Okay. Easy. See? Right?
Do we even have to do that? That's satisfying.
Yeah. So, listeners, that just means if you haven't read this, go handle that.
Yeah, I really, when I was in college for my master's, I took a seminar on tragedy, and we read a whole bunch of random stuff, and the constant discussion, is this true tragedy, or is this melodrama, and is this just sad, right? And I feel like and the discussion was always like, we know that these Greek stories were tragedies because they invented the genre of tragedy. So this is, we know, Medea's tragedy. We know it's tragedy. It definitely is, right? But what about, like, Great Gatsby? Is that tragic too? Or is that just like, oh man, I'm so rich, it sucks? Like, is that, I mean, really? Because then it's kind of like a soap opera. Is Great Gatsby tragic? Because there's that beautiful scene at the end on the docks with the green light, like, that scene is tragic, but in light of the whole story, is a tragedy. And I feel like I want to buy a copy of this and take it to that professor and be like, you need to teach this one. Whatever you have at the end of the course right now, take it out and put in this.
Yeah, this, I... Oh, man. I want to say that this... I mean, if this is not a masterpiece, the very least, it's masterful, you know. This this was amazing on all kinds of levels. You know, one might argue that the art is not like a Jim Lee or something, but that would be inappropriate here. This art was the perfect art for this story or stories. Mm-hmm. So it's just... it's hard to find fault in this comic, but I don't feel compelled to look for anything wrong with it.
No, me.
Yeah.
So. You know, we rate the comics at the end, but I don't consider myself a critic. Do you know? You know what I mean? And oftentimes when we rate stuff, we do talk about things that we did not like about this, and in this comic, when we. Both this episode and the previous one when we discussed Boxers, I can't think of an instance where we were talking about this comic as a representation of comics. You know, we just talked about this story. We just had a good discussion about what this story means and what the different elements are. And I didn't, you know, I don't even think we compared it to the other comics we talked about in as best of 2013, and it doesn't. And I'm not saying that's something we should do. And in fact, quite the opposite. I'm glad we didn't, because this work of art, you know, really stands on its own. I feel very strongly about how good this comic is.
Yeah,
it's so good, like. I feel like I got real emotional, you know, there I felt real emotions because when I read this, and it's just a great piece of art, you know. I feel like calling it a comic maybe is a little bit, it's not quite a good enough descriptor for it.
No, see, but that's exactly why, like, that's why I wanted to do this show, is for comics like this. Mm-hmm. Because people say comic and they think of the Cape stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. But it's not any less magnificent of a genre than any other kind of art or literature. And it's the exact same way in every other form of art and literature. Yeah, you know, there's things that are like Van Gogh, but then there's also DeviantArt when you search for tarot. Right? And that's all art.
Guy Gardner.
Right. Oh, God damn it. Still haunts my dreams. And then, like, yeah, sure, there's literature like Medea and Great Gatsby, but then there's also, like, what is it, 50 Shades of Grey. You know? And it's all in there in every genre. And finding comics like this and talking about them, I think, are things that, at least in my mind and the people that I can talk to, will help elevate this genre and make everyone realize that this is just as worthy of medium for literature as anything else.
Mm-hmm. Very nicely put, Andy.
So, yes. Shit, yeah. Fives all around. So next week, we're going to... How the fuck do you transition from the shit like that? Next week, we're going to do a new thing. We've been podcasting for... Fuck, a long time. 3 years? More? Yeah, 3 years at least.
Like that.
Jesus. At least 3 years. And we've never done this. We're going to read... we're going to do a series on Attack on Titan. And we're going to start by reading Volume 1, which collects chapters 1 to 4 by Isayama Hajime. Hajime? Hajime.
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 You were right the first time.
Okay. And then, after we read the first volume, we're going to watch the second one. So we're going to read chapters 1 to 4, and then we're going to watch the anime episodes 5 to 8. It's going to be exciting. So we'll get to compare art styles, storytelling methodology between visual and illustrated and animated. And it's going to be really interesting. I don't know, because there's some manga that I've read... Like One Piece, right? I've read the One Piece Volume 1 manga, and I've watched the first couple episodes of One Piece a couple times, but I've never, like, sat and seriously thought about the differences between the two and all of that. So it'll be a really interesting discussion. So next week is the manga. Volume 1 collects chapters 1 to 4. After that, we're going to do a Fantastic Four series, but we haven't written down necessarily what we want to do. So if you have a suggestion for Fantastic Four stories, send us an email and let us know at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
And as always, check us out all over the internet. Our website is AtomicPoweredSupercast.com. We've got Twitter and Facebook at APSupercast.com and Tumblr, APSupercast.tumblr.com. I don't know. I just fucked that up. Whatever. You know what I mean.
Twitter.com/APSupercast.
Yes, and Facebook.com/APSupercast.
Well, it's at APSupercast.
Yeah, at APSupercast.
Whatever. You know what we're talking about.
You found this. You'll find that. Just Google it.
We'd like to think you listened to some other episodes, too. If which you means haven't... you've heard this before.
Yes, well, we've done it properly. And as always, please subscribe to us on...
iTunes.
Yeah! All right, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I seriously want to buy like 50 copies of this and send it to every professor I ever had and said, why don't you teach this? Do it now.
So I am super sad because I know every person I try to recommend this to is not going to read it.
Yeah, they were like, oh, yeah.
It's just like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean...
I'm so sad. This is...
Poor comics.
I can't decide. I think I need to wait another year before I can judge whether this will like haunt my soul more than Underwater Welder... or less.
It will. I will think of this much more frequently than I will think about Underwater Welder. Which isn't a knock on Underwater Welder. It was a fucking amazing comic, but...
I actually think about that comic a lot, which is a little weird if I think about it. Like, but...
It's, I don't you know. You think it's weird that you think about it?
Yeah, I think it's... Like, if I reflect upon the frequency with which I think about good comics, it's a little strange.
Mm.
I've been drinking, I'm sorry.
That's fine. You do what you gotta do. It made it a good discussion.
There was a lime that was about to go bad. It needed to be done.
Oh, I have no judgment.
You drank gin too, so the lime wouldn't go bad?
Yeah, I squeezed the lime into a glass and then poured gin over it and then carbonated water.
Use lime though.
I mean, you don't want the lime to go bad. You spent good money.
You put the lime in the coconut.
Okay, I'm going now.
Wait. Did I tell you to watch that music video, like the original one?
No.
Oh, hold on. Don't go. I gotta find this.